The time trial on 3K was shorter by 6%. So the improvement was 6% on the time trial. And then the time to exhaustion at 90% of maximum aerobic speed was 42% longer.
The Triathlon Show 151. Hey, what's up everybody, and welcome back to another episode of That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host Michael, and on today's episode I interview Dr. Jérôme Corral from the University of Saint-Étienne, and he has done a lot of research in a concept called sprint interval training, which consists of doing 4 to 7 repetitions of 30-second all-out sprints. And in Jérôme's most recent research, they did it as running back and forth between cones, so not in a straight line necessarily. And yeah, the recovery between sprints will be 4 minutes, and the benefits are really, really good. For example, in the research study that Jérôme's team published in the spring or winter of 2018, they saw an increase, or I should say improvement, in their 3,000 meter time trial of 6% and an increase in time to exhaustion of 40% at 90% of the subject's maximum aerobic speed. So very interesting stuff that we'll dive into. But first, big thanks to our sponsors. This episode is sponsored by Precision Hydration, that you can find on precisionhydration.com. Some of you may have seen on my social media, my private one, not the Scientific Triathlon social media, that I did a really good race in Qashqai's, and I ended up winning my age group in the Ironman 70.3 race that I took part in the other week. And much of that, I think, is because I could stay strong until the end. And part of that is, of course, pacing, good training, but part of it is also nutrition and hydration. And I had a very specific, particular nutrition and hydration plan that I think worked really well. And I used Precision Hydration to make sure that I got enough electrolytes in my body for the hot temperatures. The temperatures were in the high 20 degrees Celsius. And it all worked really, really well. I could stay on pace all the way until the end, even though it was hard. But that's why how I ended up winning the age group. I just didn't fade, which everybody else did, because I wasn't in the lead at the start of the run or in the middle of the run either. If you want to find out your individual hydration strategy for your next race, just take Precision Hydration's free online sweat test on precisionhydration.com and get your first box for free when you use the promo code THATTRIATHLONSHOW, all one word, all caps. And big thanks to our sponsor Stack, that you can find on stackzero.com, and that's STAC0.com. Zero is spelled out. Stack has recently launched a big upgrade on their very famous Stack Zero completely silent trainer, which is silent because it uses magnets rather than a resistance flywheel to produce resistance for your bike. But now, with a new upgraded version of the trainer called the Halcyon, you can also get all the smart trainer features that you're used to and use it with all the usual trainer software in the way that you are used to from other trainers. And you get all of the other perks that only Stack provides, like, for example, the complete silence, which is one of the main benefits and one of the reasons that I chose to go with Stack, because I live in a flat share and I can't make too much noise when I'm training inside, especially not if it's long training. So that silence is worth its weight in gold. And Stack generously offers all That Triathlon Show listeners 20% off any of their trainers. So that goes for the new Halcyon or for their old Stack Zero, the base or the power meter version. So you can have different price points depending on your budget and depending on your needs for features of the trainer. And whatever it is, 20% off with the promo code TTS20 when you go and order your trainer on stackzero.com. Again, that's TTS20. Finally, a quick piece of news from Stack. They are going to be in Kona. And if you'll be there, make sure to say hi and also go and attend their cycling aerodynamics workshop that they have together with Best Bike Split and Ventum, all great friends of that triathlon show. I wish I could be there. I won't, sadly, but Andrew has informed me that there will be a Facebook live streaming from that and a Facebook replay after that as well. So I will be watching it in some capacity at least. But if you are in Kona, then definitely go and say hi to Stack and the team and say hi from me as well. All right, so without any further ado, let's dive into the interview with Dr. Jérôme Corral. Okay, so today's guest on that triathlon show is Jérôme Corral, who is a researcher at the University of Saint-Étienne. Welcome to the show, Jérôme.
Thank you. Hello.
And your research expertise and or a lot of what you've been doing research in recently is sprint interval training. So why don't you start by giving us an overview of what that is and give us an example of a typical protocol?
Okay, so sprint interval training, or we can say SIT, it's easier, is generally a 30 seconds all-out test in the literature. So it means that it's a real supra-maximal method, okay? So the most common protocol to do the sprint interval training is the 30-second Wingate test on a bike, normally, and repeat it 4 to 7 times with 4 minutes rest between each repetition during the sessions. So normally during the first session, the people or subjects start with 4 sprints. Then the second session, they do 5 sprints. The third session, 6. Then the fourth, 6-2, going up to 7 sprints in the fifth session, and the last session in the literature, they normally do 4 sprints again.
Okay, that's a great explanation. But you say that the most common one is on the bike, but this is also applicable in running and potentially other sports as well?
Exactly. So the main topic of our article was to bring these lab methods to the field. So we decided to try to validate a method that allows you to do something close to the Wingate test on bike, but running.
So what have you and others in the literature found that the benefits of SIT is?
So from both our work and the other works, we can say that SIT is it's potentially very beneficial to improve VO2 max, time trial from 2K to 10K, time to exhaustion. It's also very efficient to improve the peak power output and the mean power output. And all these results are very positive for both trained and untrained people. So it seems to be a very, very interesting method. Okay, so more generally,
one more question about that. Been studied a lot in endurance athletes, or has it been different types of athletes, team sport athletes, or how many of the studies basically have been done in an endurance athlete population?
So when we published our article at the beginning of this year, more or less we could see around 25 articles, studies, on the sprint interval training. I would say that more than 80 or 85% have been done on untrained people. So you can see the range of improvement is quite high. So we also decided to try this method, but with trained people, not untrained, but trained people, to see if the range of improvement could be the same.
But has it been usually cyclists, triathletes, runners, or do you also have studies that have been done in footballers or hockey players, that sort of thing?
To our knowledge, the main studies have been done on bike or run.
Okay.
Or sometimes they are runners, but they are tested on a bike, which is not the best methods to us.
Okay, so can you describe your own research that you did and the findings that you had?
Yes, so in our research, which was published in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research, we decided to try to validate a method that allows you to do the Wingate, but running. So we use the same protocol as I explained before. So 30 seconds work with 4 minutes rest. But during the 30 seconds, instead of doing a Wingate, what we're going to do is making trip of 5, 10, 15, 20, even 25 or 30 meters for the best athletes. And during those 30 seconds, you have to travel the greatest distance possible doing those trips.
So what you mean is that you're running back and forth.
Exactly. So you're going to 5 meters, coming back to zero, then going to 10 meters, going back to zero, etc. And you have 30 seconds to try to travel the maximal distance.
We did that when I was young and I was playing football, and we called this exercise the idiot.
Yeah, and also a long time ago in basketball, they use it called this kind of test, the suicide test. That's very interesting because maybe 15 years ago, a committee from France was saying that you shouldn't do this. And I quite agree with him because they called it the suicide test because they were doing this until exhaustion. So the main thing is that we don't do this. Okay, we use 30 seconds, so you're exhausted, but you're not dead. So yeah, that's good. That's better.
Yeah, that I agree. We did it until our goalkeeper threw up and vomited on the side of the pitch.
So that was when we stopped. A very important. Between each set, and this is one of the things that we're going to work on, because as I explained before, normally in all protocols the ratio is 0.13, so it means that you're working 30 seconds and then rest 4 minutes, but nobody tried really to see if you're getting a better result if you're doing 30 seconds with 2 minutes rest or 30 seconds with 6 minutes rest.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a very interesting area for future research. So yep. So what did you find then? What were your results with this protocol? And what?
So as I explained before, we have basically the same result in the literature. A little bit lower because we are working with trained people, but the results are quite high for trained people if you compare to other methods of training. So we both improve anaerobic and aerobic systems or metabolism. So working this, we can say that we are improving the fitness in general.
Do you have your numbers in front of you? Like how many percentage points did things like VO2 max and peak power output and time trial, time to exhaustion,
yes,
those sorts of performance?
Yes, I can be a little bit more specific. So the VO2 max was not measured. We measured the maximal aerobic speed because we did it on the field and we didn't have the K4, B2, COSMED or things like this. So the maximal aerobic speed in 15 days improved by 2.3%.
That's nice.
That's nice. The peak power and the mean power increased by 2.4%. So it's more anaerobic, if we can say this. It's not very correct, but we can see it like that. The time trial on 3K was shorter by 6%. So the improvement was 6% on the time trial.
That's a very, very good improvement.
Yes. And then the time to exhaustion at 90% of maximal aerobic speed was 42% longer.
Wow. That's very good.
Yeah, we can say that. And it's only 6 sessions.
Yeah. And how many times per week did you do them?
3 times a week.
Okay.
During 2 weeks.
Okay. Wow. So you mentioned a little bit there already. I want to move into that when you compare this to other types of training methods. So did you do that for? I guess you did. But do you have? Can you expand upon that? Basically, how does this compare to what results you might see with more traditional types of training, if you want to call it that?
I think that if you compare this to traditional methods, the main thing is that it's less time consuming, which is the best point. It means that you maybe do, instead of doing only one session a day, you can do 2 to 3 sessions a day. You have time to do something else. So you're doing your aerobic job in one point, doing this method, and then you have time to do strength training, for example, in the same day. It's not as like you go running 20Ks, and when you come back, you don't want to do something else. And the results are very close. And our results, basically, are better than the traditional method.
Well, that said, though, if you compare this to, for example, a workout like, let's say, 5 times 3 minutes on, 3 minutes off, a very traditional VO2 max workout, then that main set would be 30 minutes. And here, if you have 4.5 minutes, so 30 seconds on, 4 minutes off, and you do that, let's say, 7 times, then you're already at the, that's, of course, at the end, at the last session, but at that point you have the same duration of main set, so, and also some other types of workouts, like let's say you do 12 times 1 minute on, 1 minute off, that's a 24 minute main set. So I think that maybe it's not just, from my perspective, the way I see it, perhaps comparing to other types of interval training, I wouldn't see the time saving as the big benefit. Definitely, if you compare it to long, slow distance base building, it's a big benefit. But compared to other interval methods, do you have any opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, when I was thinking about traditional method, I was thinking about long, slow running, not the intermittent training. The positive point is for the trainers when they are going to prepare the workout. I mean that with our methods, you don't really have to measure the distance, such as 125 meters or something like that. You only have to have like 6 to 7 cones to put one at 5, one at 10, one at 15. And the only thing you have to say to your athlete is go as fast as you can. So you don't have to think about pacing or something like this. You go as fast as you can. You don't care if you're going to get tired. It's try to get to travel the maximal distance during 30 seconds. So it's very, very easy to do the workout. I mean, to prepare it. And the good thing is also that if you are lucky enough to work with or to do the workout with a friend, then you can compete during the training. So it's very, from a motivational point of view, it's very interesting too.
Yeah. I agree with that. And the fact that you don't need to think too much about pacing, you just go all out. That's because there's some interesting brain research, I think, about how the brain doesn't really regulate as much for efforts that are 30 seconds or shorter. So, which makes this very, very easy, as you say. So that's definitely an advantage.
And moreover, we can say that the harder you work with this method, the easier looks the other's methods after. Yeah, I mean, if you are running at maximal aerobic speed during these super maximal methods, the session with the maximal aerobic speed will look easier, even if it's not, but it will look easier.
Yeah. And just for the listeners that are used to my terminology, I usually talk about VVO2 max, which is the same as maximum aerobic speed in this context.
More or less.
Yeah. So that's one more thing about the protocol that I forgot to ask. The recovery, is that completely passive recovery, or is it easy jogging, or how do you do that?
So first, you have to think that maybe you, when the 30 seconds are coming, then you are 25 meters from the zero line. So you're coming back walking. Then they can do whatever they want. They can walk, they can jog a little bit, but we prefer to do the totally passive recovery. When the protocols are done on the bike, the subjects are loaded to pedal very slowly. And normally, if you're jogging lower than 40 to 50% of VO2 max, in the literature, they consider that it's a passive recovery. So we should say passive recovery, but you can let them do whatever they want, if they're not sprinting. but they won't want to do it.
Okay. So what about the injury risks? Is that something that you know anything about from your own work or from the work of others?
So from our study, we had no injuries. And I think that if you respect simple rules, such as a progression in your training, you won't get injured. Okay? To our knowledge, we don't have any articles speaking about injuries because of these methods, but it's quite new one on the field. And I used this method with rugby players, with trail runners, with triathletes, with football players, and nobody ever get injured.
Mm. Okay, that's very promising. Yeah. Even if it's, of course, anecdotal at this stage. And what about some other aspects to take into consideration? I'm thinking about things like central or neuromuscular fatigue. How do you need to account for that?
So I was asking to my colleague, Professor Guillaume Millet, I was working with in Calgary, if he knew something about this. And for the moment, sprint interval training and central or peripheral fatigue has not been studied. We did something very close in Calgary, doing a two-minute wind gait on the bike. But the problem is that we are still working on the data, and for the moment I can't say anything. But to our knowledge, there's nothing that clearly speak about the or central or peripheral. Actually,
okay, I just lost you there for a couple of seconds. But did you say anything after you said that there's nothing that speaks for either central or peripheral fatigue? After that, I couldn't hear you.
Was yeah, I said that we are working on it. So okay. For the moment, we are on the 2 minutes Wingate test and on the bike because we have to measure the maximal voluntary force. So we can't do it by running.
Yeah.
For the moment.
Yeah.
So it's going to stay for the moment in the lab.
And did you have any...
Excuse me, but we can also think because of the toughness of the sessions that we may be, but it's just an hypothesis, that we may be change the thresholds of group 3-4 that are afferent muscle groups. So maybe that's something, but as I said before, we have to work on data to be sure about that.
Mm. Did you have any anecdotal feedback from the subjects of the studies about how they felt that they recovered between sessions and how they felt in general that how tough the sessions were compared to other interval training?
Normally, so we have the scientific data showing that between session 1 and session 2, you're getting lower. I mean that the power and the mean power are getting lower. But on session 3, then you start to be the same as session 1. And then session 4, 5, and 6, then you start to improve your power. From the RPE, at the very beginning, all subjects found the methods very difficult. And by the time they start to be more familiarized, and then they even like the idea that they know the number of sprints they have to do, so they can see where they are during the session. But at the beginning, and that's why I say that you really have to respect the progressions at the beginning. If they are not like runners, if they are not used to, it can be something like, from the RPV point of view, very exhausted.
Mm. So do you know anything about how common sit is in the training regimens of endurance athletes? Like if we start about with the elite endurance athletes, is this something that you know that is being used by some elite endurance athletes in the world right now?
To me, it's very disappointing, but I don't think that a lot of people are using this kind of methods. And I think that it's something that is a very cultural reason, a very strong cultural reason. In my opinion, I think that quite all the endurance athletes quantify their training by summing the number of miles or kilometers.
Yeah.
And they are running each week. I think that they only focused on the volume and not so the quantity and not the quality of the training. But I can also understand, and the high level is the same. And it's because I think that the coach doesn't want to change the program to try something else, because if it's not working, then the athletes will complain about him. You understand what I mean?
Yeah. I am a coach myself. So
yeah. So that's very strange, because we are not the only ones saying that you can improve in very short amount of time your fitness level, but on the high level or lower levels, they are. It's something like if they were very frightened by the method or thinking that it's something more magic, and maybe it's not true. That maybe we were lucky to find those results, and with them it won't work.
Yeah, I have been using it on the bike for the triathletes that I coach quite a lot in parts of the season. Like for example, this time of year when athletes have finished their last race, that's when I usually start to include this type of training on the bike. I haven't done it on the run so far, but I'll definitely give it a shot after this conversation and hearing about these results. Speaking about that, like what part of the season, are there specific parts of the season that you think it fits very well in, or is it what do you think about that?
Without any doubts, I think that you can use it during the tapering session. During tapering period, like 15 days, that's exactly what we've done. Mm-hmm. 15 days, you're getting very low with the quantity and very high. So very low with the volume and very high with the intensity. You can do it if you do it three times a week. So you have one day working with a very high intensity, and the day after it's only rest. So that's very interesting. So you can work something else. You can do a job on the psychological point of view, whatever you want. But I think that it's exactly what, for example, Mujica says about the tapering. So you can put it during tapering. But I also think that you can use it all over the season, but not working the same way we did it for the article. In this kind of situation, I think that you should use the power output as a way to stop the session. So as I say before, we are not working like they did it in basketball. We are not doing the suicide test. We are doing the sprint interval training. So you should take the maximal power output at the very beginning of the session, and you can do as much as you want in repetition until you're going lower to 20%, or you're losing 20% of your maximal power output. So it means that you can do a 30-second test, then 4 minutes, then 30 seconds, then 4 minutes. And instead of doing seven, as we did for that was the maximal number that we did for the study, I have some cyclists that are doing 14 to 15 sets. When you see that the maximal power output of the last set is lower by 20% of the best one during the session, then you know that you have to stop the session. Mm-hmm. So you have a feedback on what you're doing. So you're doing only quality, and you can do a little bit of quantity.
Yeah. For these runners that you had in your study, and you mentioned that you measured power. So did you have what running power meters did you use?
No. So that's a little bit tricky in this kind of things, that we use the power. We don't use the accelerometers or anything because they were not working well when we did it. So we in the article we only speak about mean power and peak power and not peak power output, because peak power and mean power are measured by the meters you're doing during the sessions.
Okay.
But with the bike and with the cyclist, if you want to use this, of course you have to have a power meter to define the power you have during the session.
Yep. So I think that's about it. Is there anything else that we should talk about in regards to sprint interval training?
I really think that it's maybe the method that will allow the very high level marathon runners to go lower than 2 hours, in my opinion.
That's a bold statement. I like it.
So we are speaking actually with Kenyan runners, but as I told you, the cultural thing is something very strong. I don't know if you get on the social networks the last month of training of Kipchoge before the record, the world record. When you see what he's running, I really think that if you can integrate the sprint interval training instead of doing 40 minutes, 10Ks in 40 minutes, maybe only once or twice a week doing sprint interval training, I really think that he could go under 2 hours.
Let's hope that he tries. That would be very interesting to see. Yeah. Are you working on any other projects than sprint interval training right now? And if you are, can you? Is there something that you briefly can tell us about that?
So, for example, when we, to be very honest, when we got the results from the, didn't know if the results were so good because we improve only on the physiological point of view, or also on strength training. I mean, we didn't know if sprint interval training is more something is something closer to strength training or closer to traditional methods as intermittent training. So what we've done, and we just finished the study, last week, we started during the preseason in soccer players. We had 80 players, and we divide them in three groups. One group was only doing strength training. One group was only doing sprint interval training. And another group, we should say the control group, was doing the normal integrative training that they are doing. Like everything is doing, they always train with the ball. Okay? Mm-hmm. And the primary results show that sprint interval training is better than strength training and, of course, integrative training.
That's very interesting.
So
yeah,
that's the last one. So as I told you before, there's another study we are trying to start on the time you have to recover between sets, and if it's level dependent. I mean, if you are a beginner, maybe it's better to do 30 seconds with 6 minutes rest. If you're a good athlete, 30 seconds with 4 minutes rest. And if you are high level, maybe it's 30 seconds with only 2 minutes rest.
Mm. So, Jérôme, when you have a result, send me an email and we can announce that.
Of course. And the last one, which is even more interesting, and it's going on the way I want to do the thing, is like give the trainer very cheap tools to train. We are trying to cross the voluntary hypoventilation with the sprint interval training. So we are trying to set up methods with Worms, who is working on the voluntary hypoventilation, trying to mimetize the sprint interval training in altitude without moving from where you're living.
Interesting. That's very fascinating.
So that's the 3 points on sprint interval training that we are working on.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. As I said, let me know and we can talk more about it when you have new results.
But
for now, let's move on to the rapid fire questions and take one sentence or less to answer these questions, starting with what's your favorite book, blog, or resource related to endurance sports or your field of expertise?
So only one book would be difficult. So I choose three books. So it would be Keep on Running by Neuschulm in 1992. Law of Running by Noakes in 2007, and The Marathons by Peyronet in 1992.
Nice. What's a personal habit that's helped you achieve success?
I think that the personal habit is that I always try to think different.
And who's somebody in endurance sports or your field of expertise that you look up to?
I choose Dave Scott. Because of his book, Training, Triathlon Training. 30 years ago, he knew already things that the high-level athletes nowadays don't know.
Can you give an example of one such
for thing? For example, the lactate, like the threshold lactate. He knew perfectly that lactate was a substrate and not an enemy. Mm. It was a friend and not an enemy.
Yeah.
And it was 1986. That's why I choose Dave Scott.
Yeah.
He was a scientist. He was a very high-level athlete and a scientist.
Yeah. So you're on ResearchGate. Listeners can find your publications there and also on Twitter at Jérôme Corral. We'll link that up in the show notes. Is there anything else that you want to mention before we close off this interview?
I don't know what you mean, but now, as I told you, I think that really people have to open eyes and try to... I don't ask them to believe. I ask them to try. Just try the method.
Do a time trial first, do the protocol, and then a time trial after and see how it goes.
Like in football, they did 800 meters. 400 meters. And the results are in... they did only twice a week for 3 weeks. So it's a little change between the other article. And in 3 weeks, on 400 meters, they are going like around... 6 to 10 seconds lower.
Yeah, I'd take that.
And also for team sports, with these methods, we also saw with the soccer players that the acceleration from 0 to 10 meters, which is the most important part of the team sports, is improving too, and quite a lot,
okay.
Like 1 kilometer per hour.
Very good. Very interesting. Okay, so thank you, Jérôme,
thank you.
And it was a pleasure having you on that Triathlon show.
So thank you very much.
And there you have it. I hope that you found that interview as interesting as I found it. A couple of main takeaways here is that those benefits, the performance improvements that Dr. Corral was talking about, I'll repeat that here. It was 6% for the performance in a 3,000-meter time trial, 6% improvement after doing those 6 sessions of sprint interval training. And it was 40% improvement in time to exhaustion at 90% of maximum aerobic speed. Those are really, really good improvements. So this is not a joke. This is something that we should take seriously and definitely try. I am definitely going to try it with the athletes that I coach. As we talked about, I do it already in the cycling realm, but I haven't brought it to the running side of things yet. One of the reasons, I guess, is that I have been a bit concerned about the injury risks. But as we talked about, Dr. Jérôme hadn't had any injuries in his study, and he wasn't aware of injuries in other studies as well. Off air, after the interview, we talked a little bit more about this, and actually one thing that we did talk about was that since he was using trained trail runners as his research subjects, they have a lot of muscular strength because they're used to going uphill, downhill, change of direction, etc., which makes them perhaps a bit more resilient to this type of training, especially the going back and forth between cones on very short distances compared to running in a straight line. So what Dr. Corral recommended was that if you're not already doing strength training, if you're a normal triathlete or normal marathon runner, like most of the listeners here are, and not trail runners, then if you're not doing strength training, do that first for a while to build up a bit of strength and resilience in your muscles to the stress that this type of training will cause. But if you are listening to the podcast and you're taking action on the podcast, of course you are already doing strength training. Maybe you're already actually using my strength training program. And if you are, then you should have no problems starting to use this type of training. And as I said, definitely something that I will try with my athletes. And if I see great results, of course, I'll provide an update later on the podcast about it. All right, so that's about it for this episode. Thank you so much for the ratings and reviews that have been coming in. If you are a long-time listener and you haven't yet left a rating and review for the podcast, please, please, please consider doing so. It only takes a minute and it really, really helps me out. And I am so grateful whenever I see a new review coming in. So you can do that on iTunes or the Apple Podcast, or if you listen on Stitcher or other platforms, wherever you can rate and review. Everything helps, so please consider doing that. Finally, big thanks to our sponsors that help keep the show going. First, you have Stack that you can find on stackzero.com. Remember that you can get 20% off any of their trainers using the promo code TTS20 when you order yours on stackzero.com. And that's S-T-A-C, zero spelled out, .com, and it's linked up in the show notes. And big thanks to Precision Hydration. You can find them on precisionhydration.com and take their free online sweat test to get your personalized hydration strategy for your next race. And if you haven't tried any Precision Hydration electrolytes yet, be sure to give them a go. Use the promo code THATTRIATHLONSHOW, all one word, all caps, to get your first box for free. I can't recommend them enough. They are insanely good products. And really, as I said in the intro of this episode, they helped me keep going in a long and hot race. So I hope that you give them a try and make that be the case for you as well. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.